Come on up, Dave. Blarkey. This is Thanks, Blarkey, Dan. Everybody. This is Dave Diss. Thanks, sir. Lieutenant Dave Diss.
That's right, the most junior guy out here, apparently.
You didn't think I knew Navy rank, did you? See, that would have been a captain in the Air Force. But, you know, a captain in the Navy is about three ranks above a captain in the Air Force or the Army, whatever. Do you know anything about the Sundowners? I know a little bit. Why they're called the Sundowners is they shot down more Japanese airplanes during World War II than anybody else, right?
Yeah, that's what I understand. We've got a in our base back in Key West, we've got one of our stairwells is covered with the names and the dates of every shoot down that the Sundowners had, and it covers the entire stairwell for two floors. Going back from World War II into Korea and Vietnam and all different platforms, and the guys that shot those guys down, and the number of kills that they have, and it's pretty darn impressive, the amount, the pure just the killing power.
It was in the hundreds, I believe.
I mean, I don't know the exact number, but it's up there.
Wow, a very famous fighter unit in history. We got another guest here. You can stay if you like, Jim Dale. Jim,
all
where
right.
are you? Come on up.
I'm good though. Thanks.
Thanks, Dave.
It's not as scary as a night trap, but, you know.
Okay, Jim Dale is with Rod Lewis. I don't know if any of you guys know who Rod Lewis is, but he's one of the premier warbird collectors in the world. And Rod is chief pilot. He works down there. He's director of operations, and he does maintenance and gets to fly these airplanes, and I'm so jealous I don't know what to say.
Well, I like to tell everybody I've got the best job in the world. Just don't tell my boss because he won't want to pay me.
Really? I mean, I'd just go down there and hang out for nothing. But
well,
you
come
got,
on down.
You told me you had 24 airplanes you are responsible for?
We have a collection of 24 airplanes. It goes from a PT-22 up to and through. We actually have an F-5, like the Sundowners are flying in their adversarial squadron. But it includes two Tiger Cats, four Bear Cats, one of which is the Rare Bear, which is the current world speed record holder. Probably the centerpiece of our collection is the Glacier Girl. And the Glacier Girl, I know it's not Navy, but we've got it featured over here on Warbird Alley. And right next to that is one of our Tiger Cats.
You know, this guy gets to fly B-17 and all these fighters and everything. I mean, what an envious job that is. Can you kind of compare the Corsair from World War II to the P-51 as far as performance and everything?
I've actually got just a little bit of experience with the Corsair, but one of the airplanes that I do have a lot of experience with is the Bearcat.
Yeah.
And as far as the two airplanes, they're actually a very different airplane. Now, I've always looked at the World War II aircraft in kind of two categories. You have an early war and late war, or early technology and late technology. And a good example of that, and again, I hate to go use an Air Force reference, but a P-40 versus a P-51. And I guess a Corsair would be a good reference, too, is a Corsair versus the Bearcat. But let's go to the P-51 and the Bearcat comparison. P-51 is a great airplane. Everybody obviously recognizes it as one of the greatest fighters in World War II. But when you get a P-51 really fast, it gets very heavy on the controls. You get up to over 400 miles an hour with it, and it's two hands on the stick. The Bearcat used a very unique control system on the ailerons we first referred to as a spring tab. And that sounds very odd, but you can actually hold an aileron on a Bearcat and take the stick and move it full deflection. And what is actually moving on the aileron is a spring tab. The spring tab then aerodynamically moves the aileron. The way it's designed is that if there's very little force on the aileron, the whole aileron moves when you move the stick, but when as the air loads increase on it, the spring tab moves. And what this does for you is it's like power steering. So when you get to 400 miles an hour, 400 knots in a Bearcat, you can fly that thing with the same aileron pressures as you did at 90 knots. So it's a very easy airplane to fly. And the other nice thing about the Bearcat is you use very little trim in it. Now, the Mustang, at every power change and every speed change of the airplane, you move the throttle or you move the stick, the first thing you do is reach down and grab the rudder trim and retrim the rudder. And you do that constantly in a P-51. A Bearcat, I don't even set any rudder for takeoff. And I never touch the rudder trim on a Bearcat. You use a little bit of elevator trim for takeoff. Once you get the thing trimmed at any speed, until I configure it for landing, I never touch the trims on the airplane. So it's a very easy airplane to fly.
If you can kind of review the Navy fighters, in the beginning of World War II, you had the F-4F Wildcat, and then you went to the Hellcat. Talk a little bit about the Hellcat.
Well, the Hellcat is a very, very historical airplane. It actually, the distinction the Hellcat has is it has the highest kill ratio of any fighter ever. It's a 19-to-1 kill ratio, and it was a great replacement for the Wildcat. The Wildcat was a successful airplane, but it was one of those early technology airplanes. No automatic systems in it, had to hand crank the gear. The Wildcat, one of the great things about it, it was very well armored, so it could take a beating and still come back for more. Well, the Hellcat improved on that, and they made an airplane that was built around more guns, much more horsepower. They increased from the 1830 or 1820, depending on what model Wildcat you flew, up to the R2800, which at that time was the largest and most powerful engine that we had built by Pratt & Whitney, a great engine. But it was a slightly larger airplane. They had much more automated systems in it. It was a great flying airplane, and it enabled us to... It took the things that we learned about fighting the Zero from the Wildcat encounters and made an airplane much better. So it was actually an airplane built to combat the Zero.
Let me get John O'Connor up here. John, where are you? Thanks. Thanks, Jim. This is John O'Connor. John is the owner of the Bearcat that was on the advertisement for this Warbirds in Review presentation. John, he talked a little bit about the Bearcat. But what's it like to get one of these things and restore it?
Well, I can tell you, first off, I got a terrible summer cold, 104 degrees in Breckenridge, Texas, and I catch a cold, you know. And I can tell you, about 4 months ago, I got checked out in a Bearcat. I got checked out, and everything was great. Took the plane to Galveston and took it back to where I bought it at the Lone Star Flight Museum. From there, I took it to Corpus Christi. We did an air show. And what I noticed the very first moment I flew the Bearcat, it wasn't like the Mustang or the Corsair, where I had to go and fly it into pattern, fly it up at altitude, kind of get used to it, become friends with it. I took it up, went right into pattern, landed, because it's just so perfect of an aircraft. The second I got in it, I knew I could fly this thing, and it did exactly what I wanted it to. And like the previous speaker talked about, zero trim on takeoff. The ball stays center. You know, I'm a civilian pilot. I'm a commercial instrument pilot. But I know once in a while, I'll look at that ball, and it's off center a tiny bit. That Bearcat just stays center perfectly.
That big wide landing gear makes it a little easier, doesn't it?
My first landings, other than the practice landings, in front of an air show, Corpus Christi, some of the planes didn't take off because 40-mile-an-hour winds, quartering winds down the runway. So I go, boy, I got to make sure I don't screw up in front of the public, right? I just dial it in, plane lands, it tracks perfectly straight. It's like a T-28. One of the easiest tailwheel planes I ever flew.
And the also hardest. The one hardest, of the sexiest, I think.
Oh, instant gratification. You're on the runway, you lock that tailwheel, put the throttle up, 450 feet, you're in the air. You got to grab that gear and get it up before you get past 140 knots. That's the maximum speed for the gear retraction. And I tell you, it's a little bit of a challenge. The very first time, I'm like, wow, that's like 140, and I just got it up, and then, 170. It's really a wonderful aircraft to fly. It's the easiest of all the fighters I've flown. The Corsair takes 7 degrees of rudder trim to keep it stable. The Mustang's 5 degrees. You try taking them off without that trim in there, and you got a whole bunch of boot in there to keep that plane straight. Bearcat's not like that. The Bearcat was the ultimate war machine with a propeller. I mean, it's exquisite. It's got a hollow propeller, and you can feel that. The plane is like 2,500 pounds lighter than the Corsair. I flew the lightest Corsair, which was the FG-1D, which most of the pilots in World War II, including Chuck Downey, one of the famous aviators in Chicagoland, told me that was the best airplane. And other guys tell me the same thing, that the lighter one was better because it was more nimble, more responsive, but yet, like we talked about, it got heavy with load. The Mustang gets heavy with load. If you're coming down Air Show Center, you get to 350 knots, 300 knots, all of a sudden you start feeling that extra weight. The problem with the Bearcat is that because you can't feel that extra weight, and because it's so easy to fly, the pilots were tearing off the wings. So it's the good news, bad news. You got to make sure you're not pulling too hard. And the Bearcat just, it just, like I say, it wants to fly at 2,000 feet AGL. You put it downhill, you're going 220 knots. By the time you get near the deck, you're going 350. It doesn't look that streamlined. It doesn't look like a Mustang. It doesn't look like it's that much of a stiletto going through the air. But it just picks up speed like you can't believe.
One of the prettiest airplanes ever designed, I think. One of the design features of the Bearcat was the engine, the Pratt & Whitney R2800, which was on a lot of airplanes, including Corsair, the P-47, and a lot of bombers. But it's amazing that they could take one engine and, with aerodynamics only, make it do so many different roles.
I couldn't believe the difference in responsiveness between the Corsair and the Bearcat. It's like totally different. They always say that the Bearcat's a 2800 with a pistol grip. And that's what it's like. It's like you shoot yourself up in the air. It's amazing. It lands perfectly stable. One of the most stable aircraft coming in on approach. You just feel it. It's like locked in. The Corsair is like that too, however. The Corsair, when you get that thing down center line with that 14-foot nose, it just tracks beautifully too. But I'd say the Bearcat with that stubby nose, it looks more like a T-6 coming in on landing, but it is so stable.
Thank you for that. Thanks, John. I want to ask one of my friends to join me up here. Thank you.
Yeah.
He's the former host of Good Morning America. He's one of my good friends, and he's helped me so much with these interviews. David Hartman. David? David gave me some good advice when we started doing these interviews. He said, "Dan, don't ever ask a question that can be answered with yes or no." Very good advice. And also, if a guy's written a book, read it the night before.
Reading people's books is a good idea.
And that paid off this week, because I was supposed to interview Captain Hudner, who was a Medal of Honor recipient in Korea. And he's the guy that saved the first black naval aviator in history by bailing his Corsair in on the side of a mountain and going over there and helping the gentleman who unfortunately passed away before he could get him out of the airplane. He didn't want to see his friend burn up in an airplane. It's a great story. But 5 minutes before the presentation, David, someone comes up and says, "Guess what? Captain Hudner is in the emergency room." And I'm thinking, oh, God. Thank God I heeded your advice and studied the night before.